There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
Let's go around the NFL in the loop style.
Why are you smiling?
Because I love football.
Brought to you by Quick Assist. Here's John Lopez and Reggie Adetula.
I'm going to tell you all about how much fun you're going to have this season.
On Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610.
Yeah, we're about to go around the NFL here. You guys really coming strong for the question of the day, which was what player can you just not quit? Steve Francis just came in. Mm-hmm. Chuck Hayes, we got some of those. But in the football vein, actually, outside of football, someone said Jake Myers. All right. Thank you for texting in, Joe Spada. And then a lot of injury kind of guys, like Tony Baselli came in. T-Mac, we were talking about that extensively in the break, just the back spasms. But, yeah, Brooks Reed, an interesting one as well. Someone said Larry Tunsil. Stop that. Don't do that. But, yeah, appreciate you guys getting involved and texting in. And then also, our guy, T-Mill. From the drive, texted in and he said Johnny Manziel.
Yep, still can't quit him.
I hope he sends Mike Evans just a lovely Christmas gift and Christmas card every year.
Get out of here,
that man made him some money.
Shoot, well he made him. Johnny Manziel made him some money. Mike Evans was just a happy coincidence.
Don't do that.
Yeah,
don't
it was.
Johnny Manziel was doing some. Oh, Mike Evans down there somewhere, like a
get
whole.
Get out of here!
Run around
can,
until Mike Evans down
I can point to
there.
Five games that man that wasn't Mike Evans related that Manziel won.
Okay, if you say so.
Louisiana Tech.
I guess it is now time. Missouri, oh wow, you're gonna start
Alabama,
with Louisiana Tech.
Louisiana Tech, Missouri, all right. Alabama. Okay. Alabama's all right, aren't they?
Yeah.
Auburn.
Oh, I'll give Manziel credit. that was during the era of Nick Saban. Nick Saban's weakness being mobile quarterbacks.
Well, that's true.
And so Johnny Manziel
changed Nick Saban.
Absolutely, 100%. I will give him that credit every day and twice on Sunday. All right, let's time. We got to go around the NFL now. And just letting you know that Around the NFL is brought to you by Quick Assist, your no-hassle solution, reselling your tickets across every marketplace. Download Quick Assist from your app store today. QUICKASYST. Quick Assist, your tickets everywhere. Were you watching Sunday Night Football last night, or did you decide to actually get a decent amount of sleep?
Kind of. I started watching Sunday Night Football. I'm not going to lie to our lovely listeners. I bagged it. Enough was enough. I need some rest for you, man.
How far did you get?
Probably mid-second quarter.
Okay, fair enough. So you're able to see the history that probably happened during the course of this. But rain delay took this game into very late situations. In fact, Even on the East Coast there, the game finished on Monday morning.
1 a.m. How about 16 hours of football, NFL football yesterday? They started in London. 16 hours later, they finished in Pittsburgh.
Wild stuff. Wild stuff. And another one of the wild things, and maybe not that wild, brother of Texans legend J.J. Watt, T.J. Watt, as a Steeler, became the second fastest player to 100 career sacks when he sacked Dak Prescott in the second quarter of this one. I mean, T.J. Watt has just been fantastic. He's been playing since 2017, and it feels like that is a game record right there, man.
Mm-hmm. And he owes J.J. a car.
J.J. did say that.
According to J.J.'s tweet, once you get into the 100-sack club, you got to buy all the other 100-sack guys a car, and he said, I don't make the rules. I didn't know that.
I think he did make the rules.
I didn't know that.
I think that's how that
but
works.
I'll take it. I'll take it. TJ Watt, like, you would still take JJ probably because of the whole package.
Oh, yeah.
But TJ's, like, right there.
Yeah.
Like, right there.
I wonder how Derek feels at Thanksgiving. You know what I mean?
Derek who?
Derek Watt.
I call him Shemp.
Oh, good God.
You don't remember Shemp from the Three Stooges, but no, he was one.
No, you do not. TJ Watt, that was his 109th game.
Mm-hmm.
Second fastest. Do you know who was the fastest to 100?
I would have to say Reggie White.
It is Reggie White, 96 games.
Yeah.
TJ Watt's 109 just surpassed DeMarcus Ware, who did it in 113.
Mm-hmm.
And so six-time Pro Bowler had a sack and a half in that loss to the Dallas Cowboys last night, but he gets to join a historic class of folks during the course of this. As we continue around the NFL, this one really annoyed me. I mentioned during the course of that Giants game where the Seattle Seahawks somehow lost to the New York Giants. No Malik Nabers, but they did have Darius Slayton. And Darius Slayton is the latest player to be penalized for what exactly, John Lopez? Do you remember? Do you know?
I do. The old finger guns?
Yeah. And I get that this is an emphasis that the NFL has put up. But like the 15-yard penalty gets tacked on, and I feel like we might be doing too much, Lopez.
I don't.
You don't?
Mm-mm.
Okay, why not?
Two reasons. Number one, you should know better. Climate of everything that we're in. And number two, it's the rule. Like if there's a rule that says you can't do this and you do it, you should be criticized for doing something dumb. And that's the rule.
Okay. I hear you on that to some regard. Like, some of these cats are out here wilding. Some of these guys doing, like, the Tommy Gun celebration and all that. It's a little much. The thing that has upset me, and we actually saw this with the Jacksonville game last week in person. Just like the normal, like, first down with your hands are being interpreted as guns, because that's what happens here with Darius Slayton, right? Like, what we were seeing is these guys who are doing the first down and pointing with both hands, they're like, hey, that's guns, that's a penalty. Where I'm like, no, it's not.
Yeah, it's first down.
We're pointing first down, which one of the things I appreciate and I love for the Texans is that now they're doing
the spin
overhead with a single
Dalton
finger.
Dalton Schultz doing it looked a little awkward, but okay.
Wow, what are you doing here? What, white guys can't have a first down too?
No, it just looked awkward.
You can
interpret that however you want.
Yeah, okay, all right. He's saying white guys don't have rhythm. That's what he's saying.
Hey, man.
But no, I mean, like, I appreciate that the Texans have gone to that level to make sure they don't get penalized, but I'm like, hey, man, I understand what we're trying to do here. But the line is blurred to the point where now we're getting some of the stuff that's legitimately been in this league for a long time that has not been interpreted as guns. And now you're having a 15-yard penalty.
Doesn't it have to do with your thumbs if your thumbs are up? See, like a lot of guys do their whole hands. Like you do your whole hand, that's first down. Or point the finger.
Like, don't we?
But you put that thumb up. I know this is silly. I get it.
Yeah, I was like, don't you feel like we're in a Key and Peele sketch?
Yeah,
where we're counting the number.
You
of
can
pumps?
Do this.
Like, yeah, like it feels.
But you can't do this.
I feel like we're dumb.
That was a great sketch. But referee looking at him and he gives that one more.
Sorry, that's too many.
Yeah, that's a penalty.
That is too many. Yeah. So we continue around the NFL. Yeah, I just wanted to get that off because that's been on my spirit for a little bit.
Yeah.
And I felt like Darius Slayton was wronged in this moment, but I get it. It's because there are dudes that are doing a lot with some of these guns, so I do understand we need to cut it back, but we might be penalizing a little too widely. As we continue around the NFL, more history I guess made this time by El Tractorcito, as they call him. You know who I'm talking about?
Yes, I do.
That is Derrick Henry, running back for the Baltimore Ravens. He joins elite company. He hit a couple of milestones in the course of this game. In fact, one of them here, Byron, is Derrick Henry. This was him in the course of this game plunging into the end zone to get one of the two milestones that he hit during the course of this game. He ended up getting to 10,000 yards in the course of this game. You got it, Byron? And then he also did this.
Cleveland is in as an extra. Oh, he slipped. Then he sledgehammers his way across in a touchdown. Derrick Henry. His 100th career touchdown. That was a one-yard plunge.
He was the 27th player in NFL history to get 100 touchdowns.
I feel like we say this every week, but he's like from another planet. Just a different kind of guy. And at the end of the game, was it a 51-yard run there at the end that pretty much turn the tide, and it was a bad beat if you're in the gambling arts in that game, but just an incredible player.
I will admit, I've never been at the Texans game and thought, man, I really wish I was watching this game. This was one where I was like, okay, I kind of get it. And coming into this game, I was like, Texans Bills game of the week. They might have taken it. I'm going to be honest.
Yeah, I think so.
I think that Ravens Bengals, where both of them had 38, and ultimately it came down to a field goal at the end to differentiate it. Yeah, they can have game of the week, I guess.
Yeah, and it was, I mean, Texans were right there as well, and a lot of people would say otherwise that it was the Texans game because of the way it finished. But I'm with you. And largely because in this season in which teams are not scoring and quarterbacks are largely struggling compared to previous seasons, it was great to see a good old-fashioned shootout with spectacular plays, like both sides. What Burrow have five touchdowns? I believe he had five touchdowns, and Lamar Jackson with an incredible, you know, proverbial Houdini touchdown as well, and then Derrick Henry doing his thing, and then the botch snap, and then the kick for the win. No, it was fantastic.
Yeah, Burrow had five touchdowns and an interception, 77% completion percentage.
Yeah.
And then Lamar Jackson had 348 yards himself and four touchdowns. Up and down, it really does highlight the idea that offensively, like the slow start, it does feel like, hey, man, we might just not be getting enough time in training camp and in preseason to actually get these guys ready, especially with more and more teams leaning on the advent of, yeah, man, we're not putting our quarterbacks in harm's way in these preseason games. And so they're really learning on the job or getting themselves ready on the job in the early parts of these seasons.
That and also adjustments. Clearly, defenses are doing certain things. We talk about the safeties that are predominant, the too high. That are predominant all over.
Yeah.
Offenses seem to be making those adjustments.
Going back to Derrick Henry real quick, I'm going to test your knowledge in this. He becomes the fifth player to have 100 scrimmage touchdowns and 10,000 yards in a career. Do you have any idea who the other four might be?
I will take a guess.
Let's do it.
I'm going to say one is Emmitt Smith.
Emmitt Smith is correct.
I'm going to say one is Eric Dickerson.
Eric Dickerson did not.
What? Terrell Davis?
No, Terrell Davis.
Yeah, he didn't play that long. Jim Brown?
Jim Brown. That is one of them. If you talk to anybody about who the best running back of all time, he comes up.
He is probably it. So I have three more to go?
You have two more.
Two more?
Because obviously Derrick Henry is
one. Oh, yeah. So, yeah, not Barry Sanders.
Not Barry Sanders. These are a little bit more modern.
Yeah.
And
who are they?
LaDainian Tomlinson.
Should have known that one.
Adrian Peterson.
Should have known that
Texas
one.
Texas legends in that instance should've, as well.
Should have known that one, too.
So, yeah. I mean, that's elite company. Jim Brown, Emmitt Smith, LT, or LaDainian Tomlinson. I don't want to get anybody mad who's looking at the Giants. But and then Adrian Peterson. That's where Derrick Henry is. That is the unique dude that is happening there. So, yeah, that was incredible to see as well. All right. So, we talked a little bit about that. You mentioned that it's Jameis Winston time in Cleveland. Defend your take here.
I mean, it has to be. I guarantee you, just talking about Buffalo and how they're probably torching McDermott all day today on the radio. What are they talking about in Cleveland? Like, it's over.
34-13 victory for the Commanders versus the Cleveland Browns, in which Deshaun Watson, 15 of 28 for 125 yards, a touchdown, and no interception. That's good for another instance of his yards per attempt being below five, 4.5 yards per attempt here. 7 sacks in the course of this. It's just...
Yeah, it's over.
You can't do this.
You can't undo what's happening now. And the only reason that Deshaun Watson continues to play is ego. Ego from the general manager, the head coach, embarrassment of the deal that they made. Like you cannot... Like, one of the things that you have to give the Carolina Panthers credit for is the number one overall pick. And I get it's younger. You know, he's younger and it's earlier in his career. But still, they swallowed their ego and said, we can't play him. Can't play him. Can't play Bryce Young. You can't play Deshaun Watson.
And the tough part about it is it's the money issue of it, right?
Can't do it. Swallow your ego. Make a call.
Real nasty word.
Because it's an injustice to the other guys on the team.
Yeah.
The 52 others.
Yeah, I mean, and that's what we were talking about when Bryce Young got benched, is if the rest of that team does not have belief that you have an opportunity to go out and win, it is hard to go out and play the car crash sport under those circumstances,
exactly.
Right? To feel like you have no chance to compete and that your team and your coach is not putting your team in the best chance or the best situation to compete, that's when it gets real nasty. And so, yeah, and also, Kevin Stefanski, like, he might be coaching for his job in a way. Like,
well,
I don't think
that's another reason to make the call.
Does anybody blame him for the situation? I don't know. But ultimately, like, sometimes it's less about who's to blame, and sometimes it's just what are the results of this.
Well, and the head coach makes out the roster, makes out the lineup every week. So, yes, he's partially to blame for this. He needs to make the call and say, let's go, Jameis. Let's try to win some games and just realize that it's over when it comes to Deshaun Watson.
No. Around the NFL here in Loop Sports Radio 610, somebody else brought up that now we're just talking about airing grievances in this instance. 979 said that the group photo after a turnover is tired and should stop. Like, that started, what, about 4 years ago when they were running to the camera. I just kind of like it, man. It's cool seeing dudes celebrate together. Yeah. I've always enjoyed that about the league, so I'm good with that. But the 832 mentioned, because we were talking about T.J. Watt, mm-hmm. who had his he was the second fastest player to 100 career sacks. He made that happen yesterday. Said that J.J. and T.J. Watt pull up to the family dinner in Bentley's, and Derek pulls up in a Ford Fusion.
Well, that's generous. I would say a smart car.
All right. He still played in the NFL for a little bit. I'm sure he's got a little bit of money situated. Yeah. And 713 mentions Nick Chubb is on his way back.
Does Derek sit at the kids' table?
All right. Come on. That's a full NFL fullback. He can't sit at the kids'
table. Him and his nephews and nieces. Derek, you're over there.
It's impossible for him to sit at the kids' table. He'd have to sit on the kids' table.
Maybe he does.
All right. Okay. That's around the NFL here. In the Loop, Sports Radio 610. You got John Lopez. You got myself, Reginald Atatula. Byron Matthews sitting in for Figgy Fig as Figgy Fig took the day off for his birthday, although he has officially been listed as sick on the practice report. So he is expected to return tomorrow. He's day-to-day.
Is he?
Yeah, he's day-to-day. He's day-to-day. I am the one designating him, and I will say that he is day-to-day. All right, you're in the loop. Coming up next, let's talk about a dominant defensive effort by your Texans in a 23-20 victory. I do want to just salute the defense and where it has become. We'll talk about that next.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
Sam Martin unloads the punt. Robert Woods backtracking. Again, a deep punt at the 14. Woods to his left, 15. 20, Woods, 25, sideline, 30, 35, 40, 45, and pushed out of bounds. A great run back by Robert Woods with 30 seconds to go. The Texans can score. They have two timeouts to work with.
That looked like the younger version of Robert Woods. High stepping down the sideline.
Well, it's his former team, too.
Sweet.
Yeah, a little bit of additional revenge game in a 23-20 victory for the Texans over the Bills. Exciting game, and Robert Woods, man, stood up pretty well when it came to returning the football. It feels very, very much like he has roped that job and solidified himself in it.
Except for the fair catches inside the
But he did catch the football at the very least. He did do that. But yeah, let's be a little more aware where we are on the field.
Yeah.
But shout out to Robert Woods in that game, and shout out to. When we talk about special teams in general, cool, but the defense needs a lot of love here, John. What for you, where are you feeling with this defense? Because it feels like this defense played a dominant game, even though there was definitely some weaknesses in it. Like, it felt really good to watch this defense stand up in the way that it did.
Cornerbacks, by far. Look, Josh Allen played a very poor game, one of the worst games of his life. But there were factors in there that made a big difference. I think Derek Stingley was targeted four times, zero catches. Kamari Lassiter gave up one big play, which is going to happen when you're targeted more than the other cornerback, but made some big-time plays. Maybe I'm seeing something that others aren't. I thought the cornerbacks were as big a part of that defensive effort as anything.
Yeah, I thought they...
Yeah, as anything.
Yeah, I thought they played really well in the course of this game. But for me, more than that itself,
mm-hmm.
we came in talking about Josh Allen. Like, I know that they, you know, they lost Shakir. There we go. I keep wanting to talk about Aziz
mm-hmm.
in the course of this, and we will get there. But they lost Khalil Shakir, who is their best wide receiver. And I know that they don't have a super prominent wide receiving core. I know that they have the tight ends. But it was going to be about Josh Allen and keeping him bottled up. And that's what this team did for the most part. I think mm-hmm. there might have been two or three instances where he kind of broke contain and then began rumbling, stumbling, and bumbling. But other than that, and then there was also one instance where he tried to get that throw off on the sideline.
Yeah.
But other than that, man, you did a great job keeping him in the pocket. In fact, you did a great job getting home mm-hmm. in all of that. And so D'Amico Ryans, in fact, the first thing that he was asked in his presser specifically, and this is cut one here, Byron, he was asked, what was the key to limiting such a dynamic quarterback?
Yeah, eliminating Josh, man, is a great player. It was a tough out for us, but it took a valiant effort from everybody. It was a collective effort. D-line, we knew we weren't going to get many sacks against him because he's so elusive in the pocket. We just had to keep rushing, like keep the pressure on him. So they did a great job of keeping the pressure on him, and our back end guys, the way they covered, it was that was the reason why we played tight coverage, made the plays we needed to make. It was that collective effort of rush and coverage being tied together.
Cornerbacks, look, we are going to talk about Alshire because that was an epic effort by him. All things considered, you know, as we talked about, if you weren't listening earlier, that guy, if the environment was different, if it was a playoff game, or he was a bigger name, a bigger household name around the NFL, people would be talking about a legendary effort that he had, because not just leading the team in tackles, always around the ball, had I think two tackles for loss and a sack.
One tackle for loss, but he had two quarterback hits.
No, two quarterback hits. And two passes defensed, which were huge in the course of the game. I mean, Alshire was all over the field, lost 10 pounds overnight, was vomiting all night in the hospital, and comes out and does that. Look, he gets the game ball, so to speak, defensively. But what Derek Stingley did, and Derek Stingley was talking about Lassiter after the game as well. I think he said four can play. He's a player, something like that. Those two guys, it changes the whole dynamic on the defensive side when you have two cornerbacks like that.
Yeah. I mean, look, you know that Stingley is tough to play. In fact, there was a moment where Sting gets a PBU. He knocks the ball out of the hand of the receiver. And I almost looked at him and was like, oh, man, he's like, because it was one of those where he was given a little bit of cushion and the receiver stops like a hitch. And I was like, oh, man, I don't know that he has the opportunity to recover. And he gets there just in time. And it feels like he has such a good timing, such a feel on the field. And so you have that. And then on the other side, maybe you think, oh, well, you can go attack Kamari. You absolutely cannot. Like, they both were doing very well. But it seems like that's where your eyes were locked. I was locked in on this defensive line. We came in talking about the fact that you were missing a couple of guys. Jerry Hughes, Derek Barnett, not available in the course of this game. Dylan Horton had to be activated from the non-football injury list and immediately go into action. He gets 15 snaps on defense in this game. Like, and of course, salute to him, because that is crazy in some ways. Returning from, you know, from defeating cancer to almost immediately practicing and jumping into football activities, that just feels like a huge ramp up.
Yeah.
But like, you did not have a lot defensively on the line, and you expected those guys, especially Danielle Hunter, especially Will Anderson Jr., to come in and handle a tough job of making sure to keep your contain in it. Also, Foley, and then also Mario Edwards. I don't want to forget them because they played in as well. But maintain your pass lanes, but then also get to the quarterback in a way that, you remember, they didn't do very well last game. They did that pretty well this game, including a Khalil Davis sack.
Yeah.
In the course of this, like this defensive line, and they held up in a great way, but then they also kept him in the pocket. The Josh Allen was, they got to him, and especially in the fourth quarter on that possession where Sean McDermott kind of
spit the bit,
man. They're out here throwing, but even then, he's in the end zone and he's not able to escape. They are collapsing upon him and making it tough on him. You saw that all night long in the passing game, and I thought that was super important.
And that's where you have to give the edge rushers credit. As much as we would, and we talked about it on Friday, you know, get home. You know, they had created some pressures, but they didn't have a lot of sacks, Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter. This was a game where that was almost thrown out the window, because you did have to stay and keep Josh Allen in the pocket. You know, you did have to kind of contain as best you could. The only one sort of like, bad mark on the defensive line that I alluded to earlier is I felt like they were getting pushed around in the run game. And that's something that, you know, it's not a huge line. Seth was talking about this in the press box. They're just not real big compared to NFL standards.
And that's the entire defense,
yes,
really, especially.
Yes, but they're fast. And they were getting pushed around a little bit in the run game, which, okay, I mean, you got to take, you know, you got to give and take here. They did a great job, as you just heard D'Amico talk about, pressuring the quarterback, keeping him in the pocket, and being, you know, his word, relentless. But I thought they were pushed around a little bit, and that's something that they have to, obviously, and will, I think, when D'Amico Autry comes back, shore up.
That's a big thing, is I think some of the sizable additions that you have when it comes to D'Amico Autry and helping that was not here. But I thought that they did. In fact, I want to take another second to mention Khalil Davis, because on that rep that he wins it fast.
Yeah.
And if he does not win it fast, I only imagine what you see there. But because he wins it so fast, he's barreling down on Josh Allen, and he blows that play up. Those are the types of things that I wanted, that were impressive But, of course, we got to talk about the man in the hour. And, of course, I'm going to allow D'Amico Ryans to talk about this. This is cut three here because Azeez Al-Shaair, like, again, we could put it in the context of him being sick and all those things, and that matters. I don't want to ignore that. But even if he wasn't, his play was incredible. I mean, he was in the run gaps and fitting the run gaps, you know, incredibly well. He was out defending, as we mentioned earlier. So D'Amico Ryans asked, what did Azeez's effort mean for this team today?
Azeez meant everything to, you know, what we did today, because, you know, Azeez was, people don't know, he was sick last night, didn't know if he was even going to play. So for him, right, to be as tired as he was, for him to gut it out and play every snap, like, it was an outstanding performance by him. And I know what he was battling. I know how hard it was for him to push through and play through that game. And I got so much respect for Azeez and what he accomplished today.
The thing about that stood out, a couple things. Denzel Perryman was more than fine last year for this team, but he doesn't make some of the plays that Al-Shaair made.
Absolutely not.
He just doesn't do it.
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
And I think the thing that I get from that is, like, if he's going out hard, everybody got to go hard. Like, I think that him being the soul of the team, I say that, and I don't say it lightly. I think that he ends up kind of inspiring within all these other guys a level of effort and energy that they just have to draw from within. And I think that that was necessary in this game because, look, I'm not going to pretend like the defense was perfect. They had their instances where, ooh, it's starting to look bad, especially when you saw that, when you heard that number 70 announced as an eligible receiver, you're like, oh, they're in a jumbo pack and they're going to get down. And they moved, but ultimately this team at various points in the course, this defense particularly, in various points in this game just decided, we're not breaking.
I'm telling you.
This stops here at various points.
You are absolutely right, because they knew, everybody on that team, everybody especially on the defense knew what he was going through and what he went through the night before, and that he was doubtful, you know, and maybe not officially, but they were doubting if he could play. And I said it earlier. I feel like Al-Shaair should really be one of the fan favorites in this league. Not that it matters that much. I'm just saying it's kind of a shame that he doesn't get that kind of credit, and maybe he'll start to. Because that was a here's a comparison for you. That reminded me of Brian Cushing. That was a Brian Cushing type of game. And all over the field, in the backfield, in coverage, sideline to sideline, making always around the ball. And Brian Cushing obviously has become and still is a big time fan favorite. That's what it reminded me of. He was awesome.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that intensity is, I've seen that kind of comparison already early on in this year. The comparison with the energy that, you know, Brian Cushing brought, Azeez Al-Shaair brings. And I think, as much as we can talk about the technical aspects of it and the way that, you know, that he's watched film and you see how that inspires, how quick, how fast he reacts to things, it almost is that intangible stuff that is amazing to me, because it's like, dude, where do you find the wherewithal to play like that? Right. Yeah. It's almost like the audacity to play at that level, knowing that you are broken in your body in that way.
Yeah.
And I think that was huge to see from this defense. So I wanted to salute that especially. But the defense played incredible in this game, all things considered, and they needed every bit of it as the Texans get a last second victory, 23-20, in which you see the sideline pour onto the field after Kyahmi Fairbairn nails the 59-yard field goal. But 23-20, the final in favor of the Texans. It is a victory. Reaction Monday here in the Loop. It feels so good to say it.
And it was in a thorough game. It was there's a no complaint game right there.
Yeah, well, I mean,
you can parse. You can nitpick.
Okay, I like what you do. No complaints.
Yeah,
but nitpicks.
Yeah.
All right, we'll do that. In fact, we will do our Victory Monday nitpick, I believe, at 1 p.m. But coming up next, we got to get into what's popping, including baseball that's still happening, even though the Astros are not playing in it. There were some wild things happening there and more. We'll talk about all of that next.
The biggest stories in sports and entertainment. Sports Radio 610 style. In the Loop presents What's Poppin'.
All right, let's get into What's Poppin' on this Monday. Victory Reaction Monday, brought to you by Shoppers John Deere. Your Texans get a 23-20 victory over the Bills. That's first and foremost something that's popping that we need to make sure that we say at any given point. But as we continue on, also some other things that happen is playoff baseball going on. And
it got hairy.
It did. It did get hairy.
It got hairy.
In Los Angeles, it was Padres-Dodgers. And first and foremost, hey, man, what did the Dodgers do to the Padres? Because they beat them like they stole something.
I'm telling you, first of all, they poked the bear. That was part of it. I've always said this about Dodgers fans. I think they're the worst fans in baseball, and I know that Philadelphia plays baseball. That you always see these videos, these fights in the parking lot. There's, you know, all these other things. But then, of course, yesterday, Jerickson Profar had a baseball thrown at him. They were throwing stuff from the into the bullpen, dodging beers and other stuff as well. The game was delayed for 9 minutes because the Padres, well, first of all, they threw that at Profar. But this is what it sounded like.
Well, we've seen the bad blood on the field, the tension on the field. Of course, extends to the fan bases as well, but no excuse for what we're seeing right here. You know, and as teammates, you gotta remind your player, man, this is a big playoff game. You gotta control a little bit of the emotion so that you can take care of business here instead of letting other things get you off your game.
Isn't that hard, though, to go back out there in left field
and
get stuff thrown at you, trying to focus on the game?
That was embarrassing. That's good,
Byron. If you happen to just tune in, you wonder what the hard feeling.
That was ridiculous and embarrassing, but they did. They beat him like a drum, ultimately, and Dodgers, you know, all of a sudden in trouble and humiliated.
Yeah, 6 home runs in the course of this one the Padres had to ultimately beat the mess out of the Dodgers. I think they're tied at 1 game apiece in that one. But yeah, it's crazy because I had that one on just on the side and I was like, man, this looked like it's a pretty fun baseball game if I actually wanted to pay attention to it. I just didn't really want to pay attention to it all that much. And of course, there was all sorts of other shenanigans. Yeah, Dodgers got it. Dodgers fans got to be better.
They're the worst. They're worse than Philly. No question about it.
Elsewhere, other things that were happening as well. Did you see the other baseball game? I didn't want to mention this just because of the up and down nature of it.
Phillies?
Yeah. Yeah, man. Every time I looked up, somebody was getting their get back because it started with the Mets up 3-0. I was like, okay, Phillies might be in a bad place. And all of a sudden, a couple of back-to-back home runs put the Phillies back into it. And then the Mets made a comeback.
Yeah.
Also, just fun baseball. Fun baseball.
And two more today. We got Yankees going today against the Royals and Tigers and Guardians. It's enjoyable. I mean, obviously you're not as invested, you know, with your heart locally, but it's been an enjoyable postseason, no question.
Yeah, that's the thing for me is like, man, it's enjoyable, and I wish it was more enjoyable if the Astros were playing baseball. I feel like I could have gotten into it a lot better. All right. But before we move on, you did want to mention the troll job that happened.
Oh, this was so awesome. This is the second time I've seen this in recent years. So the guy, again, it's Profar, who just has some style out there, man. So they hit a long drive over the fence, and it looked like it was going to be a home run.
Beer, first one to Mookie Betts. Is lifted in the air to left field. It sends Profar back, tiptoeing to the corner. He's at the wall. It is! Nobody's sure yet. Now
he
they say
it. He caught it.
He caught it. Mookie Betts is rounding the bases thinking that it's a home run. Jerickson Profar says, I got it.
He was doing the old, I'm going to just milk this for about 15 seconds.
God, I love that.
Watch this.
I love that.
Yeah,
I love it.
So he catches it.
It kind of does a little hop like, oh, well.
Well, did it feel like that? Because I felt like he just stood there and looked at the
he looked at the Dodgers fans, but then he kind of
for a while.
Then he kind of realized nobody knows if I caught this.
Yeah, like, so I need to let him know that
like
I caught this
backwards a little bit, and ultimate troll job. That was fantastic.
Yeah, incredible job by that one. The Padres get a victory there. Some other things that are popping. I was kind of amazed to hear this from Mike Tomlin, coach of the Steelers, after the really late and delayed football game, Sunday Night Football, which congratulations to that Sunday Night Football crew for stalling for so long, because it took forever for that football game to ultimately start. It did. It went late into the night. And the
Cowboys, I hope they got dinner. They kept talking about how they usually eat once the game starts, and they had to postpone their dinner.
No dinner.
In the studio.
No dinner for you. I imagine they eventually ate. It feels like that's something that happens. But the Cowboys get a win late in that one. Now, George Pickens did not factor very, very frequently into this game, did he?
You may have missed this. This happened about 1:30 in the morning. But you cannot get more in the doghouse than George Pickens is right now with this. Listen to Mike Tomlin.
You know, we just wanted to kind of minimize his reps in an effort to get more productivity. You know, we just trying to rep manage in terms of the totality of the big picture. He wasn't less of a focal point in terms of our intentions of what we wanted to do offensively, but we did want to cut his reps a little bit in an effort to get higher quality play.
Holy smokes.
I really love audio like that because, and I can be one to do this from time to time, so I'm not trying to throw too much shade here. Mike Tomlin was just saying words at that point. He's like, if I throw enough big words at you, maybe you won't hear what I'm saying right now.
But I did. We wanted to lessen his reps so we could get more quality.
But that's the thing that's kind of crazy. Like, you look at that Pittsburgh receiving core, and you could take this to the tight ends as well.
Mm-hmm.
How many guys do you particularly like talent-wise, over George Pickens?
Well, talent-wise, is a Mike Tomlin said we can't play him because he's not doing what we want him to do. We want better quality. We had to lessen his reps so we could try to win.
Nobody had over 35 yards receiving.
And he couldn't get on the field. Think about that. That is the epitome of doghouse. He is in Mike Tomlin's doghouse. And he flat out said it.
Yeah, no wonder they were out here like, hey, pick me. Wide receiver out there, Brandon Ayuk, come over here.
Golly. That was wild.
Yeah, that is kind of incredible. But hey, man, if there's a coach that you would believe and you would side with in a situation like that,
mm-hmm.
I feel like it's Mike Tomlin. Like, that's consummate professional, always gets the results. Like, he just feels like the one that, hey, let him cook.
It's got to be close to 100% in support of Mike Tomlin.
Yeah.
When Mike Tomlin says, we can't play this dude because we want good players. We want players that do what they're supposed to do. I think most people will support Mike Tomlin.
All right. Some other things that are happening in the course of this. Jabril Peppers, who is a Patriot safety. He did not play yesterday because he was arrested on Saturday. Charges that include strangulation and drug possession, according to police in Braintree, Massachusetts. So apparently Jerod Mayo said that they knew about this. Like, they were, I guess he called him.
Yeah.
Peppers called him, and so he knew of the situation, but they're letting it progress as it is supposed to. That feels like something that doesn't get resolved immediately.
It does. It seems as if, you know, for what it's worth, if you, you know, judging from the reports, you just went through some of them, you know, assault with whatever else, basically strangled a dude, allegedly.
Well, according to Braintree police, the woman that alleged that Peppers hit her and choked her, she accused him of choking her, quote, at least 6 times.
Yeah.
Took off her clothing, put her outside. Also, police said that Pepper shoved the woman to the ground, shoved her head into a wall, put his hands around her neck to strangle her. And it said that officers confiscated, quote, a clear bag containing white powder substances. So, yeah, that is an awful, awful police report to be dealing with.
Yeah.
And, that makes it seem like he is not going to be particularly available for the Patriots, which is the least of his concerns in a big way. And you hope that the woman is okay. But yeah, no, that's a crazy situation to all of a sudden get to hear about, like, the day before or on game day.
Yeah.
If you're Jerod Mayo.
Yeah. And Mayo, of course, you know, and I don't really blame him, but, you know, what else are you going to say? That was a very damning police report. But at the same time, you know, he said it's a process and they're going to have to go through all the facts and all that. So I don't know if he's going to. Do you think he's going to play?
I have no idea, man.
Sounds bad.
It sounds really bad. Sounds. And because, like, we've gotten the details up front in this very graphic way, I would think no. But the NFL is also, we know, they've kind of moved away from getting out early on punishment, and they're trying to let kind of the legal process play out.
Yeah.
So.
But they don't have to.
They don't have to. But that has seemed to be their MO of late.
Mm-hmm.
I could see him playing, which would be a crazy thing.
Wouldn't that be bizarre?
That's been the way that they've handled things of late.
Yeah. And so it could be Peppers, and could be Drake May starting at quarterback.
That is right.
That's happening as well.
That is correct. Mike Rice, who is the ESPN NFL Nation reporter that covers the Patriots, said that he's seen a noticeable shift in Jerod Mayo's answers regarding the quarterback situation in the past days. Apparently, Mayo said last week the way that the team won its game was unsustainable, and he seems to strongly be considering a switch to Drake May. So you could possibly next week at Gillette Stadium. Is it still Gillette Stadium? I don't even remember.
I think so.
You could be seeing Drake May make his debut, rookie quarterback in that situation. Does that matter that much to you? Because it feels like Jacoby Brissett has been not even fine, really. He's just kind of been...
Yeah, he's been subpar, but I think it matters. This defense, these cornerbacks, rookie quarterback in his first start.
He would be in trouble.
Yeah, he'd be in big trouble. He'd be in big trouble. So, yeah, bring it on, Drake May.
Yeah, that's something that we have to keep an eye out for as we continue. There, that's what's popping. Was there anything else that I missed? Oh, yeah, that's right. I guess to bring the spirits up a little bit, It was a wild week in college football, and we'll talk more about that tomorrow, but one of the wildest situations was the number one team in the nation.
Yeah.
Alabama Crimson Tide going to Nashville, Tennessee, and losing to the dork school. Vanderbilt, the Commodores, got a victory over Alabama, and they handled it either not well or about as well as you could expect the Vanderbilt Commodores fans to do.
It was enthralling.
They had a great time.
It was enthralling.
They ripped down the uprights, and then they took them to the river, a la what Tennessee did last year,
yeah.
Except it means so much more. They have, in order for them to get to the river from where their stadium is, 2.5 miles.
I saw three, but it doesn't matter. They went a long way. I saw a map. First of all, like you said, we're gonna dig in on college football tomorrow, but this one deserves its own mention today because... Vanderbilt beats Miami. I mean, beats Alabama. That's really all you need to know. And then they trolled Nick Saban. They played his quote in the stadium as soon as the game was over about the only place that isn't hard to beat to win in the SEC is Vanderbilt because you get more fans there. And then I was just enthralled with, they're showing it right now, actually. Not only did the goalposts
Down Broadway.
They went down Broadway.
Because that's how they have to get... They have to go through downtown Nashville.
They went 3 miles or 2.5 or whatever it was.
I'm sure they ruined quite a few bachelorette parties.
I thought all those bachelorettes in their pink cowboy hats and all that stuff, having their bachelorette... I bet you they loved it. And then they go to the...
They had no idea what was happening.
Then they go to the Cumberland... That too. Then they go to the Cumberland River. They went 3 miles. And somebody was posting... Only Vanderbilt students. You called it the dork school. It's a great school. I've visited it a couple of times. Nice place, beautiful campus, all that. They asked permission of some officers as they were turning on Broadway. Is it okay if we go down Broadway? So I was like, don't ask. Just go. But I'm sure the cops told them the same thing. So they did. And they went, all that distance and dumped them into the river. I'm not going to lie, man. I was watching these late games, and it's on my phone. I was like, okay, where are the goalposts now?
Yeah.
I got to follow the
goalposts. Honestly, I can't blame the police for letting them go because it's a lot better to kind of have that coordinated and had an escort as opposed to the madness that could ensue if they did not with all that traffic and such. But, yeah, shout out to Vandy getting their first win against an AP top five team ever.
Mm-hmm.
They had 60 efforts before, and they had lost all of them. 1-60 now against AP top five team. Shout out to the 40-35 win.
Over they're on a streak.
They're
on a roll.
You know, I don't think that's how that works, but I'll rock with it. There you go. What's popping here from the weekend that was, including your Texas get a 23-20 victory at NRG Stadium. All right, coming up next, let's get into the thing that has become a staple. And we were so excited for the opportunity to get at this, especially because of something that particularly that happened during the game. But let's talk about who hooped in this game, who had fantastic performances in the Texans' 23-20 victory over the Bills. We'll discuss that next.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games and a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.